This is episode number 23 with Scott Neary.
Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.
Hello and welcome. Did you ever wonder why people announce the podcast episode number in their intro like I just did at the beginning of this? It doesn't seem to make very much sense to me that you need to say the number, like I don't care what number episode this is, and you just clicked on it. It definitely says the number on the spot wherever you clicked on it, on iTunes or on my site or something. So that's been something that I hear everyone do it, and I don't know why. So I started doing it, but I'm going to stop doing it as soon as I think of a better way to introduce it. Like, what do I say? Hey, this is the next episode of my podcast. So I don't know, maybe that's why they do it, because it's an easy way to do that, and it's an easy way to create a intro, and you don't really need to be creative and come up with anything, so you just put a number there and it makes sense. So this episode, next episode number 23 of the Chris Ruggiero Podcast, is with Scott Neary. I was recently took a little trip out to Los Angeles, California, and I met up with Scott and recorded this podcast. Scott's a performer. He does juggling, and I think he described it as strange and odd tricks and based around a juggling show. Super cool. I don't really know Scott that well, but we did a show recently together in New York City at Slipper Room. That was the first time I had seen him perform, and he did a very good job entertaining the crowd there with his unique brand of entertainment, as they say. And we chat about different things that he does and kind of his theory on performing, and he has a really cool outlook and approach to kind of creating his style of entertainment and where that comes from through watching other entertainers and analyzing how other entertainers create their show and how they interact with the crowd. And I think his view on that, his approach to being an entertainer and being entertaining, is quite interesting and intriguing. So we will get right into it, because I enjoyed talking to him and learning about all of his stuff. And we did this interview in his apartment in Hollywood, which was very, in itself, his apartment was very interesting and intriguing. But I think that's up to maybe another podcast episode. So here it is. Scott Neary, my podcast number 23. Enjoy.
What's the point of this podcast? I heard Alex Clark's thing. It was cool. It was fun to listen to.
Oh yeah.
But
so yeah, like what I'm trying to do is like make them about performers and like travelers and people who are out doing cool stuff, mm-hmm. but not so much as an audience for performers. So like I want the audience to be people who are just like fans. But it turns into people that aren't performers listen to it and feel like it's just like they're out of the loop.
Okay.
So this might be, well, maybe we'll keep this in. So people that are listening, this is for performers, I think, get something out of it because they listen to other performers. But then like what I'm trying to make it happen is like that normal people can listen and get like an inside, a behind the scenes tour.
Okay.
So why don't you give a little introduction for people that don't know who you are or have never seen your stuff?
Hello. I'm Scott Neary. I'm eating an apple. And I'm a professional performer. Okay, I'm Scott Neary. I've been performing since I was 11 years old. Started out doing magic shows. But now I do unusual juggling kind of things and comedy. I insult the audience and I they laugh. And I do shows at corporate parties, which are special parties for when a big fancy business has a celebration for its employees. Then I get hired to go on stage and terrify them.
So where did as a performer, when did things transition from being doing magic and your just kind of traditional things into how you said now, like kind of into like a weird juggling stunts and How did that transition come about as, you know, kind of a generic into a specialized, as a true, like, real entertainer should kind of find their own voice and their own character to portray?
Yeah. I started out with doing magic shows when I was 11. I was knocking on people's doors and saying, "Hi, I do magic shows. Do you want to do you have a birthday coming up?" And then I did that for a while, and then I wanted to learn new things. And I was taught by this very traditional kind of magician guy. It was my neighbor, and he was, like, mentoring me. But then I wanted to... I thought that all the tricks that you could do were, like, the tricks that were in books and the tricks that were sold in stores. So I was not very... It was kind of annoying when I would do a magic trick and people would say, "Oh, I've seen this one."
Mm.
So then I started learning other stuff, and I realized that when I made a balloon animal for somebody or when I juggled for somebody, it didn't matter if they'd seen it before. It was special for them because it was happening in that moment.
Yeah.
Or it was a gift that they were receiving. So, but I didn't, it wasn't cognitive. It didn't happen really in my mind. I just realized that I liked it more.
Yeah.
So then I started juggling more, and I met this juggler, Frank Olivier, in Nashville, and he encouraged me to go out on the street. So I went out on the street a few times, and then I moved to Kentucky and started doing just odd jobs, making money, and living in a storage unit and watching his video, Frank Olivier's video, every day at dinner time. I had a TV with a VCR in it, and a VCR is like a tape, but it's hard to explain. And I'd, every day at dinner, I didn't have cable, so I'd just watch this video that Frank gave me of his show over and over again every single night. And when I finally hit the road and started doing street performing, I sucked. I was horrible. And I started just putting in the tricks that I could do of Frank's show. And that's how I started my road to being a successful performer. Then he saw me perform when I got to San Francisco. He saw me perform and he was like, "Oh, that's my show." I was like, "Oh yeah, that's true." And then, because the transition was pretty smooth, so I didn't really realize how much of his stuff I incorporated in. And I was like, and on the street, it's a lot of stuff is shared and stolen and stuff like that more commonly. So then I started developing my own things. And there are still some similarities in my pacing and things similar to Frank's show. But after that time where he saw me perform his show, then I realized that I had to start working on my own stuff. So I had ideas and thoughts that I liked, and I had different things that I'd been playing with that I never got to use.
Yeah.
Started throwing those in.
Were there any other, throughout the initial time or more recently, any other people who really inspired you besides Frank's show that you could you know, not pull from, but, like, be inspired and kind of create your own spin on it?
I'm a sponge for live entertainment.
Yeah.
So I watch tons and tons of stuff, and I try to incorporate anything else that I enjoy into figuring out how that can modify my performance.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's hard to divide, to draw divisions between the things that have inspired me, because there's so many things that have inspired me and so many things that tweak how I see things. So, like, just an example is, like, I'll go to an open mic night and I'll do 3 minutes or 5 minutes of open mic of stand-up, but the whole rest of the time I'm not just sitting around. I'm watching how every performer is doing. When they do poorly, that's more interesting to me than when they do well.
Right.
Because I can really learn. I can see, like if a comedian gets a laugh that they don't understand why they got the laugh and the whole audience is laughing,
yeah,
then that's really interesting to me. Then I have to figure out, like, oh, why don't they see that? What do I do when I'm on stage that's going to block me from seeing that thing?
Mm.
How can I recreate an environment like that where the audience is laughing and I need to catch up to them, or where I can preload jokes so that, or ideas so that they affect the audience in a surprising way.
Right.
Or like watch a bloopers show to find out how people react when something's really fucked up.
Yeah.
Can I say fuck a lot?
You just did.
Okay. That was twice. That wasn't a lot. I can do it a lot.
Yeah. We can do whatever we want.
Yes!
We're the king. I'm the king.
You're the king!
They don't know what we're talking about.
No.
But that's a funny thing. So talking about being on stage, there's a really funny thing about saying that you have an inside joke
mm-hmm.
and not letting them in on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll actually... I had this thing. My buddy Kip, who kind of is behind the scenes on a lot of the things that I do, he was on stage, like, on the wing of the stage for this one show. And I said... There's, like, this line came out. And it was basically, like, making fun of a different performer.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, no, like, it got laughs because it was, like, a lot, something. And then, like, but not really. It kind of just fell. And I looked over and I was like, oh, I guess, like, inside jokes don't really work when you're in a room full of strangers.
Uh-huh.
Which got, like, another, that was a better laugh. And then after the show, he said everyone was coming up to him like, hey, what was that inside joke about?
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing of the whole hour show. Like, they wanted to know what that weird line that they probably didn't even remember the line.
The performers wanted to know it?
No, the people in the audience.
Oh, okay.
Were, like, wanted to know what that was, like, a standout thing because it was, like, something out of reach of, like,
right.
They couldn't touch it.
Huh.
And that was an interesting thing that I just rolled off. I almost forgot that I even said it until he said afterwards. Like, people were asking me, like, oh, what was that inside joke about?
Yeah.
That's cool. It's, like, really interesting.
So,
thing as you look at that, like when you're analyzing, as you can go to a show, can you ever go to a show?
So you could look at that as like a really powerful thing, or that your show was just not interesting.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Which, depending on how depressed you are that day, like you could just go, oh man.
They didn't see any of that stuff like, that I did.
Like David Copperfield, there was this trick misled. That was a pencil, sticking a pencil through a dollar bill.
Yeah.
Then David Copperfield did it first on TV. And they used on their marketing this quote of him saying, I make the Statue of Liberty disappear. I walk through the Great Wall of China. And then everybody walks away talking about this stupid thing I did with a pencil. Like, I think that's really funny.
So
the weird things people pick up on.
Can you go, as you say, you go to a show and you're watching a performer interact with the audience and you're kind of analyzing what's working, what's not working, and why, and then relating that back to how you can utilize all of that. So it goes back to this. Can you go to a show of any kind now and just enjoy it? Not that that's not enjoyable, like creating the thing, but just sit back and kind of shut off and be a normal audience
mm-hmm.
member? Yeah. Or are you always kind of seeing that as a performer through a performer's eyes?
Right. I think that the point of being, the reason I want to be the best performer ever, it isn't even comparative. I just want to be really super awesome because I want to entertain the most sophisticated audience member. Like, even if they're a performer or they're a... Mel Brooks or whoever it is, I want to entertain that person. So, and I think that's what really you're talking about is sophistication. And a lot of people also relate it to ADD. Like, I got to keep up with these people that have ADD.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's what it is. I think you have people at different levels of sophistication. And what I mean by that is like people that have different experience, different amounts of experience with entertainment. And they want different things because of that. Like somebody that has a lot of experience with art might really like Jackson Pollock, which is just splatter paint.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody that's new to art might be like, I could do that. Why are they selling that for so much money?
Right.
And so Jackson Pollock is like, a small slice of very sophisticated audiences are Jackson Pollock. Jackson Pollock is for that slice of audience. I want to be for like the like 4-year-old kid to the like master performer. I want to be that performer. So like in the same way, I can be I can be in somebody's hands. I can just let them carry me away if they're a great performer. I can totally be a full-on audience member for those people. But I can also watch a show and have fun analyzing it or have fun looking at it from some weird angle. Like, I can't believe that guy thinks that mustache is a good idea. Look how creeped out that lady is on stage with them.
Yeah.
Whatever. That stuff's really enjoyable to me. And it's weird because I count all that as part of the experience anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Here's I'm just going to go on weird tangents.
Yeah.
There's this, this guy wrote this blog about going to the movie theater,
mm-hmm.
about how it was when the Alamo Drafthouse was kicking people out for using their cell phones during movies. He wrote this blog, and it was about how going to a movie theater is this group experience. You are getting people that are laughing at weird moments or shouting at the screen or throwing popcorn or texting or talking on their phones. And that is part of the group experience. If you don't want the group experience, stay home.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. It made me look at things differently. It made me think, maybe I can appreciate things that annoy me a little bit better.
Mm.
And I can start to appreciate the weird thing. I can start to look more at the detail of how that group experience is happening. Like, maybe a heckler isn't ruining your show.
Yeah.
Maybe he's providing something. He might be providing it just for his table, just mm-hmm. for himself. He might be providing it for the whole room. And whatever it is the more relaxed you are in the moment, the more powerful you can make that thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So on that level, what's your take on people at shows, like your shows or other shows that you're at on Snapchat and Instagram and all that? Where do you stand on that? Kind of in line with that still as well? That's part of the group experience?
Yeah. I don't... usually I perform at some place where I'm hired to perform.
Yeah.
And they can set up their own rules for whatever the event is. If I'm performing at a corporate event, most likely there aren't very many people on Snapchat because they're like old white men a lot of times. But usually the venue sets the rules. So if I perform at a comedy club, there's probably no texting. If I perform at a circus variety show, a lot of times they'll be like, take your phones out, take some pictures. Right. Share them with your friends, and that adds to the whatever mess that doesn't matter of the internet.
Right. Yeah, I wrote this blog thing about something about that and about how the take on it was that old performers used to say how you would look out and see blackness.
Mm-hmm.
And my take on it was that that's no longer the case because everyone's face is lit up now by the phones that are in their hand when you're on stage.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're not black anymore. You see them, their screens lighting up their face, and they're watching the show through filming it on Snap. Because I do a lot of shows at colleges. So mm-hmm. every single person in the audience literally has their phone out and they're Snapchatting at some point throughout the show. Sometimes the entire show. I've had shows where there's been a person with like an iPad in the front row
yeah.
and they film the entire iPads. Show.
Yeah.
Like, they have this iPad and they're like, I can film my entire life. Uh-huh. And I don't know what they're going to do with that.
Yeah.
Probably just delete it. It's probably like the process of filming it, like, is therapeutic, I think, for some people, like knowing that if they do want to rewatch it, they can, but they mm-hmm. probably don't. But iPad the entire show, never once made eye contact with me in real life,
mm-hmm.
just through the
how do you feel about that? What was your take on it?
Well, initially, you know, a couple years ago, as this was just starting, that people were having iPhones, that everyone had a phone that had a camera. It was, well, I think initially, like with Instagram, it was cool because they'd like take the phone out once or twice when like during a big trick and like take a Instagram and then put it away.
Right.
And then kind of Instagram video came and gave this tease of, oh, they can record a little snippet of the show. Right. And then Snapchat comes when like you can just pile them up.
Right.
So it's like they start Snapchatting like just the whole thing, and they're just posting all... I don't know where this is going, but, like, they're sending it to their people, their friends in the dorm room, like, in the next building over that didn't want to come to the show, but you know they're sitting in their, like, in their bedroom watching the show.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, it would have been a lot better if you were over here.
Yeah, maybe. You would have still be looking at a screen.
You might have saved a lot of battery power, though. You know, you wouldn't have had to charge your phone tonight. So, but yeah, then I was like, I kind of am just, I'm still trying to figure out a way how I can capitalize on that. And, you know, knowing now that people would rather get their entertainment, a lot of people, a good portion of people would rather get their entertainment through this, you know, phone in their pocket. So how can I utilize that? And I'm still trying to figure this out, but like on stage, I want to have like a major part of the stage, like my Snapchat scan thing. So like they kind of like have to. Out of, like, they feel guilty if they don't scan it. Like, knowing that they're Snapchatting the entire show, like, they'll add me. And then they'll still be connected. Then I can keep entertaining them.
Does Snapchat have a QR thing in it?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
It's got, now it has, like, a little ghost that you can scan, like, within the app. You can just, like, take a photo of it, and it instantly, like, that adds them. Like, they get, they follow you then through that. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So, again, like thinking back to that, how you said, how can you utilize that group experience? And like some people would be like, oh, this is ruining live entertainment because these kids are watching. They just don't care about reality. They want to watch it through the phone. It's like, well, okay. Like now let's think about how back in the day before there was television, the pioneers of that were like, well, we can't say no. Television can't happen.
Yeah.
Because you can't stop that train. So it's like, we're not stopping this cell phone thing. So, like, how do you utilize it? And it's like, well, just get on board. Like, and now they see your show. That's just the beginning. Before, that was the end. Like, the end of the thank you, good night.
Yeah.
They might never see you ever again or ever interact with you. Now, thank you, good night. Like, see you tomorrow on my television show that I'm making of my life.
Yeah.
That's going to go on forever.
Yeah.
Now you created this lifelong fan and interaction. So on my side, I'm like, this is cool. I don't utilize it enough, and I don't think almost anyone utilizes it enough. If you're trying to do that, have this connection. As an entertainer, I want to have a connection with the audience. And I don't like the idea of it ending. So I've always, since I ever started, I like gave away posters at the end of the show. Like I'm always there taking photos and all that stuff because I want that to... I want that poster to be on their dorm wall for the rest of the year. And then when their buddies come over, oh, yeah, that guy is like, you know, did a trick or something, you know, something.
I think the thing about it that is a problem from my perspective of wanting to give the audience everything that I can is vacations are really nice. And your phone becomes not just a normal everyday thing, but it's also kind of a compulsion.
Mm-hmm.
That it'd be really nice to take a vacation from once in a while.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so those opportunities where I can give people a break from their phones and give them extremely engaging, powerful entertainment that doesn't stop until I'm off stage. That is a wonderful treat that I love giving to people. So if I can give them that treat and I can give them a break from their boring idea for what they're going to do that night, if their like stupid idea is I'm going to come to a show and I'm going to be pissed off and because my wife made me come here and then I'm going to go home and watch sports, that's like not a very good idea. And I can change that idea for them. I love that. If their idea is, I'm going to get on Facebook like I always do, and I'm going to take some photos of whatever I'm doing and send it out to people and wait for them to comment, that might not be a very good idea compared to what I can give them.
Right.
So, like, from a completely selfless perspective, I have something that I've worked really hard on that I've honed. I believe in it. I've been told over and over again that I'm better than a lot of people, and that I think I have something, an alive experience that you can't get from a recorded experience. So they have the opportunity to get that, and part of my responsibility, I think, is to tell them that I have that that they have that opportunity, to tell them, like, hey, if you put down your cell phone, you can enjoy this, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like those moments, I think, where there are times in your like experience of life that you get finished with it and you're like, oh, I wish I had a photo of that because it was so great, but yeah. You forgot it was so, you know, you were actually immersed in it, you know, whether it be theater or going on a hike somewhere, or whatever, seeing something amazing. And oftentimes you do, you're like, oh, I almost wish I would have gotten a photo of that.
Mm-hmm.
But did you ever see the movie Walter Mitty, the new one with Ben Stiller?
No.
There's a moment in it when he meets the photographer and there's like this snow cat something. And he like went through all this, like basically went through this crazy journey to get to find this like rare cat. And this photographer had his camera there. And Ben Stiller's character with Walter Mitty, he said, "What? When are you going to snap the photo? Because the thing's going to run away." And I'm going to mess this up. So you should, maybe I'll punch back in what this, but it's something, talk about ruining live experiences. he said something about like sometimes the punchline of the whole thing was like, sometimes I don't take the photo because in these beautiful moments, like that would ruin it. Like he just wanted to have that experience. Like he saw the cat.
Yeah.
He didn't need to take the photo to show anyone else.
Yeah.
And he went on this huge journey to get the photo and then he realized, no, let's not ruin it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I thought of that in that moment of how do you bring people so into this experience that they forget that they have a phone or that, you know, they forget that they need to, that they're supposed to be taking photos all the time.
Right.
And you can get there, you know, like you said, you can get there, you can bring an audience to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy, but I'm not sure how to do it. But you can.
Mm-hmm. But it's also like, sometimes you really have to jar them and like, you have to fight them for their, like them holding on to their misery or their shitty plan for their night or their whatever.
Yeah.
You have to fight it. You have to shock them out of their thing. Especially if you're in a show, if you're in a group show with a whole bunch of different people and they're all being crappy and the audience is like not feeling safe and they don't think consciously, but they kind of decide, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to guard myself. I'm not going to let these performers in because if I let these performers in, they're going to make me nervous. I'm going to feel all their fear. I'm going to feel them being selfish and I don't have that much to give. I just worked all day and I just got a babysitter and I came out to the show and now they're shitty.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to sit through it and survive it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got to fight those people and say, look, I am here to take care of you. I'm going to give you a good show. And I know that this show sucks so far, but let's, let's get a break from it for a second.
Yeah. Yeah. has there been, go into a specific about that. Like, cause that's obviously if you can say that story, you've had that happen to you, you know, where you go up and have to, you know, win them over and you only have maybe a few minutes.
Yeah.
Do you have specifics of a time when that happened and kind of,
I'm a badass. So it happens all the time. I'm in a lot of group shows and there are a lot of times when, try to think of there's so many, I can't think of a specific individual one, but I watch the pace of the show. Like, here's how the show declines. The first performer comes on stage, and he's like telling some jokes that aren't very good. The pacing's really slow, and the audience isn't responding. So he slows down. He waits longer. He gets less confident. that separates him from the audience. They get more bored with him and more angry that he's up there doing mm-hmm. that shit. Then the next performer comes on stage and thinks, oh, that guy just didn't do a very good job. He starts out, he does a few of his things. Then the audience is still angry. So he doesn't overcome it. He just tries to go and do his thing as if it's a normal audience. Mm-hmm. But they're not a normal audience. They're already loaded. So then he does a few jokes. It doesn't work. He starts slowing down. He starts worrying. His tension shows. And then everybody else starts feeling tension. So now they're tense and angry. Then the next performer comes on. And she's not very good. And she just doesn't have that much experience. She isn't quite sure what she's doing. She's been at a few shows where she's gotten some good laughs. As soon as she doesn't get a laugh on the first joke, she's crushed. Mm-hmm. Or she doesn't get applause on the first trick, she's crushed. And then the whole rest of her act is a train wreck. So now the audience is sure that they're not going to get anything good. They're angry. They're tense. They are thinking about a million other things that are going on in their lives. And they're like performing for the performers. The performers are coming on stage looking at them. And the audience has to like go and smile and whatever, try to clap at the right time. And they're all the spotlight's on them. The performers aren't even responsible anymore because all of a sudden all the performers think it's a shitty crowd. So then I come out. I watch whatever the pace of the other performers is. Is there a commonality in their pacing? Is there a commonality in their tone? Is there a commonality in what they're presenting to the audience, where they're standing on stage, how they're talking to the audience? Are they talking negatively to the audience? Are they trying to put a shine on the thing? Or are they like, are they all doing this type of joke? Are they all doing this type of trick? Whatever. So then if I find those commonalities, then those are awesome paces for me to break. Mm-hmm. These are awesome opportunities for me to show the audience that I'm something different.
Yeah.
So when the, just like you can wake up when a noise stops, the audience can wake up when the pace changes. So when they wake up and maybe they get afraid because I'm coming out to the front of the stage and I'm yelling right into some guy's face, or I kick somebody out from the audience, just tell them to leave, or I start talking really fast and blowing through my material and just giving them a ton of gifts like right away, and I'm making them a promise, then that all of a sudden they don't have the defenses that they had for the last acts, and they're awake and they can finally make a new decision about how they're going to deal with this show.
How conscious is that process?
It's pretty conscious. I'm I try to be really I think that's what a live performer can offer an audience, is being conscious.
Yeah.
So for my important shows, I'll eat well the day before, eat like be really careful with what I eat and how I exercise and how much rest I get. Mm. We're with really, really important shows, then I'll do that for the week before, and just lots of focus on everything that's going to make me super conscious in that moment.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I was thinking, you know, because you almost have to be, it almost has to be automatic. You consciously kind of guide that to where it is. Mm-hmm. But as you said, you have to have everything kind of in line and prepared for that to just happen.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you don't have that time to plan to see what's working. You know, it's like it needs to be just instant, and that happens automatically. So that's what's something that, again, that's the other thing of, well, you'll see a performer that is just not working,
mm-hmm.
and it's because they have this rigid act that this works sometimes, so I'll use this and mm-hmm. try to shoehorn it into all these different venues. And then you see a great, you know, I've seen comedians come out and do 8 or 10 minutes. And like the first time they walk out there, and they go, this goes back to the whole experience of a community together, walks out and someone shouts something out, like, as soon as they're walking out. And they just, like, performers that are listening to this know, like, performers the 5 minutes before they go on stage are complete maniacs for the most part, pacing, like, freaking out. And then as soon as they walk out there, you know, like, you wouldn't know that. So a comedian or something might be backstage, like, thinking, oh, this first line. Once I get through that first line, I'll be on a groove, they're talking this. And, like, as they're delivering it, someone ruins it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've seen such great artists be able to, in like a 10-minute set or something, just abandon their act.
Mm-hmm.
And then just go, like, this guy, he could either be the enemy or a savior of everything, you know?
Right.
It's like, he could have been kind of like, everyone's annoyed, all the performers are annoyed, this guy's shouting out, but now all of a sudden you can just turn it and make it where he's part of this great thing.
Right.
So if you can adapt to things and be flexible, and that's something for our non-performer audience that's, like, so universal.
Yeah.
Like, nothing ever works.
Mm-hmm.
How, when you're backstage, and I just did air quotes on backstage, that's like preparing for your show or preparing for a job interview or mm-hmm. preparing for work every morning
yeah.
or preparing for a drive.
Yeah.
Like, literally nothing ever works how you...
Right.
I think that nothing ever works.
Yeah.
You know, because you're expecting these things to just fall into place and they don't. So I think that...
Yeah, expectations are stupid.
Yeah.
They ruin your life in every way. Yeah, totally. For me, it's like an audience, a not very sophisticated audience, sees the show as an extension of whatever life is. And that's, in an ideal world, that's how the audience stays. When they become sophisticated, they keep seeing this, like, okay, this is this guy that's going to talk to us as if it's a conversation. And that's what I shoot for when I'm performing also, that the audience feels like I'm giving as much as I'm taking from them. Mm-hmm. I'm not just taking their attention and giving them nothing. I'm not just begging them for applause. I'm not, you know, it's a back and forth. And there's this video that I shot one time that a photographer shot for me, and it was just the audience. I had one camera for a show, and that's all I had. So I was like, just shoot the audience. Let's see what happens. And she just panned around the audience for the whole show. You can watch these different characters in the audience. I had them turn up the house lights during the show. And you see these different characters in the audience and how they're reacting to things. And some people are, like, leaning forward and, like, nodding and, like, and getting involved in what I'm saying. And some people are, like, mostly... people have boring faces.
Yeah.
Like if you have an audience and their faces look relaxed, then that's a good sign. It's a really good sign.
Right.
If they're just like smiling the whole time, then something's weird. They're not enjoying what your show is.
Yeah.
Cuz you think about hanging out with your friends and you laugh a lot, but then you just like go like, yeah,
and
you're
right.
relaxed. And you're enjoying the time that you're having, the best days of your life. You're not smiling all day.
Right, yeah.
I don't know why. So yeah, in a conversation or when you're hanging out with somebody, when you're hanging out with a friend, somebody comes up to you and says something weird, then you go, that guy was weird. Wasn't that guy weird? What's that guy doing? Why did he have... why was he wearing shorts? Shorts are weird. So, like...
It's an inside joke.
Yeah.
See, now they're going to be emailing me. What's wrong with shorts, man?
I'll get hate mail from the shorts wearers of America. But that's what happens when you're hanging out with your friend. Whatever comes up is cool. I guess that's what happened just now. You don't have this rigid plan of, I'm going to talk to you about my girlfriend and how she's really nice to me, and then we will move on to a conversation about the weather for 4 hours.
Yeah.
You don't do that. You're like, so it's weird for audiences when they don't get that fluid experience in a live show.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to know the secret to life, podcast listeners? I don't know it, but For me, like, enjoying things and finding serenity and peace in life is like bumper cars. Like, the first time I went on bumper cars, it was, I wanted to get from the place I was, I wanted to go really fast and get to the other side. That was my goal. I wanted to get to the other side. And I just got clobbered by all these stupid kids. And I hated it. I hated being out of control.
Yeah.
And then the second time I rode it, I was like, okay, yeah, they're clobbering me, but I'm still trying to do some stuff. And the third time I rode it, I was like, okay, I just want to hit my sister. If I can run into my sister once, that'll be awesome. That's it. And if I didn't hit my sister, I was still happy that I got to run into some people really hard. Like, so that's how I think of things. Like, if I can enjoy this moment for what it is, find, like, instead of having expectations, I have, like, soft goals that I don't really need to hit, mm-hmm. and I can just keep on pushing the gas, then that's awesome. That's, like, that's enjoyment in life and on stage. And looking at, like, a lot of what you're talking about, though, is stage time. If people don't have a lot of stage time, if they haven't performed in a lot of different venues, and they haven't just gone on stage like crazy, then they're going to have trouble with those mechanisms that get them the things that they want.
Yeah.
Even if they have really good theory, really good ideas about how they want to present to an audience or where they want to take the audience, then they're going to have trouble controlling their body and their mind and their voice and speech to do that. If you watch, like, the Rat Pack, have you ever watched any videos of the Rat Pack singing or talking to an audience? It's right. The same.
Yeah.
They are the most comfortable mm-hmm. on stage, and they do everything smoothly with such little effort, and they look like they're your friend the whole time. They look just... it's amazing because they were doing 12 shows a week for 1,000-seat crowds forever. Mm-hmm. Like, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis were doing this, like, 1,500-seat theater in L.A., like, 3 shows a night or 4 shows a night or something. It was insane, doing the same material over and over again and working it out, figuring out what it is, figuring out what the audience likes. We don't have that opportunity usually.
Yeah. So I always like to kind of give a life lesson, which you naturally went there here towards the end. And it's interesting to talk about how when I talk to people, the consistencies of what people like, you know, most of the people that I talk to are out doing non-traditional, you know, career, not going to a normal job every day, mm-hmm. entertainers or whatever, whoever I talk to. And it's oftentimes the same thing, you know, like we came up a few times, be flexible, you know, in the bumper cars, like, mm-hmm. again, when life, like, your plan isn't going to work probably, but mm-hmm. you can enjoy this weird thing that you get bounced into.
Yeah.
And you can somehow appreciate that. And then, you know, it's the same thing then of be prepared, like, with these performers that have stage time and whatever your thing is. And one of my new things that I'm pushing is the idea of learning as many new skills and being as well prepared as you possibly can be so that you can, you know, we have all these opportunities coming down all the time and we're just not even watching them. We don't even realize that they're there because our experience doesn't involve them, mm-hmm. but the more skills that you have or the more stage time that you have or the whatever it is, so you learn more computer programs or something so that you're more versatile at your job,
right?
Then you are able to now to not only see those opportunities, but you naturally position yourself under them so that you can catch them. And that's all consistent with pretty much everyone I've been talking to, and that's like something that's really cool. Like you said, what's the secret to life or something? It's like not that hard. Uh-huh. Just go do good stuff and be prepared and be flexible.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to add to that to wrap it up here for the listeners? as they go on in their life, whatever path they're on to...
Well, if you guys are mostly audience members, fans, whatever, then you... I'd say an important thing is people see a show, and to see a good show, you don't really need it to prepare anything. See a bad show, I think you need to realize that shows are bad, and that's okay. And you don't need to be angry at the performer or anything else. You don't need to be upset with yourself. You can walk out of any show that you want to, and you can also just... A thing that's really helpful for me is to switch focus. If I'm watching a show that sucks, then I can realize that it sucks. By realizing that it sucks, then I can switch my focus to something else. So then I can see something else happening in the show. Or I can watch, like, I can count the number of times that they say division, or like whatever word, like weird thing that they're doing. I can start to do that thing and enjoy that part of it. And it's okay to enjoy. It's okay to enjoy that part. A lot of times audience members think that they're stuck in whatever the performer wants you to like. Mm-hmm. And there was this guy that was insane and homeless and like mentally deficient. And he was doing open mics in San Francisco. So he would do open mic stand up, and his stand up was insane. Like, it was all over the place. It was grandiose and nonsensical. And I just laughed the whole time. I was the only one in the audience laughing. The whole rest of the audience is just like worried about him, and like they don't want to laugh at a retarded guy. But I'm laughing. So that's what this guy wants. He's on stage to get laughs.
Yeah.
So I'm laughing. I'm going to enjoy it. It's my time too. It's not just his time.
Yeah.
And then I became like friends with him, kind of, where we would talk after the shows and stuff. And he was really nice. And I loved that he was getting up there and doing it. And I loved that the whole thing that was happening. And one time he told me, I said, "How's it going, Russ?" And he said, "Oh, it's good. I just found out if I do my act for a psychiatrist, they have to hold me for 72 hours. So I've been sleeping indoors for the past week." I don't know if he meant it as a joke, but I laughed really hard. I thought it was genius, and I think that's like, I think that's a real, it's a really good way for people to enjoy a lot of stuff. I run into a lot of performers that don't want to watch live shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why. Like, I think that you can always learn something new. You can always enjoy it for whatever weird thing it is. Like, I enjoy other audience members being uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, that guy's so nervous right now. And there's nothing's going to happen to him, but right. He's like terrified right now. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And also I have a newsletter, an email newsletter that's free. It's called Stage Geek, stage-geek.com. And you can sign up for free, and it's for fans and performers and producers and all kinds of different people that go into making live shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about live entertainment. If you want to sign up for that, that'd be great. It's free, and I'll send out just occasional thoughts. And then sometimes I write blogs, and I have interviews of different performers about topics.
And where else can we look up your stuff if we want to see some of your stuff? Do you have a...
Search for Juggler in Los Angeles, or Pancake Juggler, or Scott Neri, or whatever, and you'll find a bunch of stuff. I'm on Instagram and Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I have a Facebook, and I have a website, and I have a YouTube thing that isn't very active. But yeah, that's my stuff.
Cool. Check it out.
Be my friends. More than Chris. Be more of my friend than Chris.
thank you, guys and girls, for listening to the show. And thanks to Scott for joining me on this episode, episode number 23. I need to figure out a new way of labeling episodes, maybe a unique way. And I am in search of new guests to be on the show. So do you know somebody who is interesting and you would like to hear more of a little behind-the-scenes access into their life and their world? You should email me. Or better yet, go to my website, which is chrisruggiero.com, where you can listen to the podcast, and I have a contact form there. So you don't need to remember my email address. You need to remember my name, which is Chris Ruggiero, and then add .com onto it, because that's how you get to websites on the internet. So thanks again for listening, and check out BetweenDreamsClothing.com. Buy some t-shirts, because it's summer. If you're listening to this when it comes out, it's almost summer, I guess. Not summer yet, but it's coming. So go buy a t-shirt. That's BetweenDreamsClothing.com. That's my clothing company. If you don't know that, go to the website and learn about it and buy a shirt. And that's it. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.